it is working. So thanks to the organizers for inviting me to speak here. I would like to speak about another cryptographic theme. I have noticed that some of the talks came more from number theory, and this is a talk almost without number theory, but it is from cryptography. So let's have a look at digital signatures. And one thing that I was very interested in when I first entered cryptography is, are digital signatures really useful? I mean, in practice. And when I started working on this, and I gave talks about this also to get grant money, we would talk about signing email messages or signing contracts electronically. Who signs his email messages here? Okay, there's one person, there's two people. So I think now the you sign contracts electronically? So it is an interesting question. I mean, the first question is, do we really need digital signatures, right? I mean, it is a nice concept, and for mathematicians, it's a good excuse. I mean, it used to be a nice excuse to do number theory, and this is what we pretty much experience in this conference also. So the question is, do we really need digital signatures, or is it an excuse to get money for a number theoretic grant application? And I would like to convince you that we really need digital signatures first. This is very strange. I have this nice picture, and it never shows for some reason. That is very sad. So give me a minute. If it doesn't show here, I have to. This is a strange technical problem. But. You have to see this. So it came from another talk. So I will go back to this other talk, but this is what I wanted to show to you. So this is a web page that appeared in 2003. It says Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates murdered at Los Angeles charity event, suspect killed on the scene by the Los Angeles Police Department. And it is obviously a CNN page. I'm watching CNN a lot in my hotel now. So that is a, what can I say? I mean, it's a TV news channel. And obviously, this is incorrect. And what happened was the stock in Korea fell dramatically after this was broadcasted in Korea, and then some radio station broadcasted it. And so the question is, and now I have to come back to this other, I don't know, for some reason, I think this is a Microsoft computer, and this is the reason, I'm not sure. I mean, this is really strange. I always get this. I don't know whether anybody has ever seen this, but this is what happens in this. I tried this several times. Anyway, all right, so, okay. So one thing is, I mean, this is what digital signatures are used for. They are used to authenticate web pages. Now, here's again a question, do you trust web pages more when you see this little lock there, yes or no? I think, to a certain extent, yes, people who are doing home banking, they trust their web pages more when the lock is closed. Now, in Germany, we have a German health card, and it's going to be using digital signatures, and this is what it is going to be doing. So it has an obligatory administrative part, and you see insurance data up to paperless transmission of prescriptions. There, digital signatures will be used. This is, I find, the most important application of digital signatures currently. Microsoft Windows XP, for example, is automatically updated. And I have this laptop, and there it is updated. And I think on all the laptops which are now working somewhere, people are not listening but working on their computers, so maybe some update is. And this is what Microsoft says. There is a strange thing that they say. They say encryption. Initial data is transferred using HTTPS, and updated are transferred using HTTP. So they transfer their updates using HTTP, but then they say the data packages downloaded to the user system by Microsoft are digitally signed. So the automatic updates are authenticated by digital signatures. Now, suppose someone is able to sign an update in the name of Microsoft, and that update just says, just delete the hard disks of everybody who is not listening in lectures or something. Or, you know, just delete all the hard disks of all the laptops in the world that run XP next week. I mean, this could be done. And it is clear, I mean, this is not a joke. I mean, clearly you see that digital signatures are extremely important. Without digital signatures, no automatic updates are possible. And here, and it's not only Microsoft Windows XP, I mean, Reddit Linux, SUSE Linux, Mac OS, Sophos Antivirus, Norton Antivirus, all sorts of programs are using this in the background. They are all digitally signed. So digital signatures are really extremely important, like from a practical point of view. So it is not true that digital signatures are only an excuse for a number of theoretic grant applications. German passports. I mean, the Americans want everybody to have biometric data on their passports, otherwise they cannot easily enter the United States anymore, and there's biometric data, and they are signed using elliptic curve signatures. I mean, this is on every new passport. So, you know, the question is, RSA and ECDSA are basically the digital signature schemes that we are using, and I have a few pictures here for you. These are supposedly the inventors of the elliptic curve digital signature scheme, and this is Shamir, Rivest, and Edelman. And the question, how long will those signature systems be secure? I mean, these are the only signature systems that exist. And here I have this prediction of Arjen Lenstra from 2004. You see that this is his extrapolation of key sizes being used in 2006, 10, 12 bits, he says, to be have the appropriate security. And in 2046, he predicts 3,034. But ECDSA is much more moderate, so we could say, well, this is fine. However, this is a quantum computer. It factored 15. Anyway, but we know that a quantum computer is, like, at least from a theoretical point of view, will make these signature schemes that we have insecure. So the question is, what can we do? Right? And we can, of course, believe that there will never be quantum computers, but an interesting question is, are there alternatives? So the first question when we talk about alternatives is the question, so how should we approach this problem? There is a paper from 1990 by Rompel that says, for digital signatures, you only need one-way functions. One-way functions are necessary and sufficient for secure signature schemes. So hash functions suffice. And if we sign documents, we have to hash them anyway, and we don't need more. So at least from a theoretic point of view, no number theory is required for digital signatures. This is not true for public key encryption. There's arguments, and there is a paper by Impaliazzo and Rudig. They say that black box one-way functions are not sufficient for public key encryption. They have arguments for this. And for public key encryption, it seems that we need trapdoor functions. So public key encryption is much harder than digital signatures. And this is, I find, an important thing, that we should look at these two problems, generating public key encryption schemes on the one hand and digital signature schemes on the other hand. These are really two different things. The first thing is much easier than the second thing, although RSA and sort of in the beginning with RSA signatures and RSA public key encryption, and it seemed as if this was kind of the same thing. It is not true. And this is what I want to show you now. So there's actually a very old signature schema, old in the sense of computer science, not mathematics, and it is Merkle signature scheme. And let me give you the idea. So the Merkle scheme works as follows. So first of all, a so-called hash-based one-time signature scheme is used. A one-time signature scheme uses one key pair, and this is the signature key, and this is the verification key per signature, one key per signature. This is not very useful for example, web servers. So web servers have to sign many requests. So this is from Merkle's thesis. So what he does, he constructs a hash tree, and this is from 1979 or something. And this is a picture that he has in his thesis. You can find it on the web. And the a so-called authentication path reduces the validity of many verification tools to the validity of one public key. I will show you in more detail how this works, but you have to. So these are the verification keys, and this is going to be the public key. So this combination will be a signature scheme that only uses hash functions. And this is sort of justified from the theory also. Okay, I want to explain to you first how one-time signatures work, and then you can see why we only need hash functions. So we need a hash function that maps arbitrarily long strings to strings of length n. Now, this is how we generate the key. We need a signature key, we need a verification key. The signature key is a sequence of bit strings, so we have two n bit strings, each of length n. Okay. Now, to come up with the verification key, we apply our hash function. Here it is only used as a one-way function, and we come up with images. So y1 is the image of x1 under h, y1 of 1 is the image of x1 of 1. So we have, for each index, we have one string with refers to 0 and one which refers to 1. Okay? So these are 2n secret random strings, and these are public images under the one-way function. Okay, let me give you an example. So that might, for example, be the signature. This is the signature key, and this is the verification key. Now, this is how we sign. We take a message, we hash it, and then we use the signature key as follows. The signature consists of the random strings. I have a message. So the signature key, you want to see the message? No. This is in German. I mean, this is, you will not understand this anyway. So signature consists of all those random strings with the correct argument here. So if this bit is 1, we have x1 of 1. If this bit happens to be 0, we publish x1 of 0, and so forth. So that is the signature. Okay? Here's the example. Okay, what's the signature? Just a test whether you understand this. So we have a 0 here. So we have to select this string. So we have a 1 here, so we have to select this string. And we have a 0 here, we have to select this string. These are the pairs, right? So this is the signature, okay? Okay, here's verification. So we are given the message and we are given the signature. So the verifier certainly knows the hash function. He applies the hash function. He selects the corresponding verification key strings. What he does is the following. He hashes the signature and he checks whether those are equal. And they should be equal, right? So here's an example. This is the example which we have seen. We have seen this is the signature. Now the verifier computes the hash that he can do. Now he can select the corresponding strings from the verification key. These are the corresponding strings. So he has 011, 011. He has 010, 010, and he has to choose 100 because this is 010. And then he applies the hash and he checks. Right? This is how it works. Very simple way of signing. I mean, it's very primitive, so to speak. Okay, so this is true. So we played a little bit around with this. So what did I do now? Well, if you change this, for example, here, for example, now we want to forge a signature. So we change the hash. When we change the hash, that is no longer correct. So to make this correct, we have to change this hash, and we would have to invert the hash function to obtain the right X, right? I mean, so being able to forge a signature requires you to come up with the inverse image of the corresponding hash value, and that would be the corresponding string in the signature, okay? Okay, so now this is how the one-time signature works, and I told you you cannot simply apply this in practice because you need one key for one signature. So this is what Merkle does. He chooses some H, which is the depth of a tree, and then he produces the pairs of keys. So these are the verification keys. These will be 2 to the H verification keys that are produced in advance, and these are 2 to the H signature keys. And now he applies the hash function. These are the hash values. Then he constructs the tree as follows. The parent is the hash of the concatenation of its right and left child. So you concatenate those two, you apply the hash, and you obtain this new node, and this is the public key. If you construct your hash tree in this way, the public key is going to be the root of the hash tree, okay? And the depth is H. Now, how do we sign? Well, we take this document. To sign it, we select signature key number I. Then we use signature key number I to produce the one-time signature. This one-time signature, the index I, and the corresponding verification key go into the signature. However, the verifier will not know whether this is a valid verification key, yes or no. We have to help him to verify this. So how do we help him? We construct this authentication path. So the authentication path will help him. So this is the right neighbor, the left neighbor, the right neighbor. So this is the authentication path, and these are just the sort of siblings of the nodes in the binary tree that will help the verifier to follow, to go from the verification key to the root. Okay? So how does this work? It works as follows. So the verifier knows the public key and he knows the signature. So first of all, he checks whether, given that this is a valid verification key, the verification works. If it works, he knows that at least the signature is okay, but he doesn't know whether the verification key is okay. So the verification key now, well, what he does is he applies the hash function. He knows the right sibling. He applies the hash function. He knows the left sibling. He applies the hash function. He knows the right sibling. And he checks whether the root that he obtains is the key. So I have a question for you. Why is I in the signature? Right. Exactly. Yeah. In order to know whether this is the right or left sibling, you need to know what I is. Otherwise, you cannot know this, right? Because the only thing that you know is this. I mean, do you know where this thing is? No. You have to know. Oh, if I is odd, it is the right sibling. If it is even, it's the left sibling. And then you have. But this is just the last bit, and this is the previous, the next to last bit, and so forth. So that helps you to follow this. Okay. So it's kind of a simple signature scheme. It has nothing to do with RSA and DSA and all these complicated elliptic curves, hyper-elliptic curves stuff. You know, this is really just very simple. Why was this never used? This is a good question, right? It was patented, number one. But the patent expired recently, so it is not patented anymore. So we could use it now. Actually, the German National Security Agency, BSE, uses it in one instance already. So I'm sort of making propaganda for the system because I like it, so they are using it in one instance. Unfortunately, the private key is very large. You have this tree, you have the sequence of the signature, so that is really large, this thing. The authentication path computation is pretty expensive unless you store the full tree. I mean, if you don't store the full tree, you have to reconstruct it each time. So that is very expensive. And the authentication tree computation in the beginning is very expensive. If you, for example, want 2^4, we were asking ourselves, how many signatures would you want to be able to make with one public key? 2^10 is 1,000. That is not enough. 2^20 is 1,000,000. I'm not sure whether this is enough for a web server. 1,000,000? Sure. So we thought 2^40 would be fine. But then you get a real big tree, right? So that doesn't really work well. So there are, now I would like to guide you through the improvements that have been made in the past so many years, and then I would like to show you what the current the performance of this thing is. So this is a better one-time signature scheme. So again, a system parameter is the hash function. And now what we do is we will not sign bit by bit, we will sign several bits simultaneously. Okay? And we need this number t, which is basically n plus log n over w. N is the number of bits in the hash function, and this is going to be the length of this string that we are looking at, and it is much smaller than 2^n. Okay, so this is how we generate our signature key. We will generate t random strings from with bit strings, sorry. And now, this is the corresponding verification key. We apply the hash function several times. Namely, we applied 2^W. Actually, I think this should be a 2^W. This is a misprint. So 2^W times 2x1. 2^W times 2x2 and so forth, and then we also apply the hash function to the whole thing. So this is just one bit string of length n. This is the verification key. So the signature key is smaller and the verification key is much smaller. Okay, now this is how we sign. Now this is now for w equal to 3, we do this. Suppose this is the hash value of the message. We split it into the strings of length w, which is 3. We These are the numbers that correspond, that have this binary expansion, the corresponding binary expansion. And say we have n to the n over w, this is p, such little numbers. So then there should be a parenthesis here. Then we should compute some sort of complementary value that we have to need to check, and this thing we expand into a binary string at which we append. And now what the signature is the signature is going to be, we have to apply the hash function b1 times, b2 times, bt times to x1, x2, xt respectively. And the verification works as follows. So just applying the hash function 1, this is replaced by applying the hash function 2 to the w times. And now we have this signature. We compute b1 up to bt as before, and then we apply the hash function 2 to the w minus b1 times to sigma 1 and so forth, and we just compare, right? So this makes up for the number of times the hash function has to be applied to this x1 in order to obtain the public key. So that's, I mean, even if you don't understand this in detail, this shows you that one can do something about the one-time signature scheme. It makes the one-time signature scheme more efficient. So now, this is what we can do with, Bill Gates again. Actually, it is true. I mean, when I changed these slides, he actually appeared on this slide for some reason. I don't know why. Anyway, so we make a truly random Bill Gates. We apply a pseudo-random. This is a truly random string. It is input for a pseudo-random number generator. And this is the seed. We use the seed to generate the first sequence x1 up to xt. This is the first signature key. The second signature key, here you have them again. The second signature key is obtained by using a second seed that comes from the pseudorandom number generators as input and produces the next sequence. And now what the signer does is he is not going to store all those, but he's sort of recomputing them. That is the idea, right? So if you, for example, are working with signature key number 15, you go 15 steps in this direction, and then you generate your signature key, right? So this is what you do. So you don't have to store that much anymore, okay? So authentication path computation. You can store the whole authentication tree. So you have 2 to the h plus 1 nodes, which is pretty big. I mean, remember, I mean, maybe h is 40. That is a huge tree. So Sidlow has an interesting algorithm. In this algorithm, it suffices to store 3h nodes and compute 2h hash values per signature. And I will show you how this thing works. So, so this is the first authentication pass, right? If you use this verification key, you need this path to the root. So this is the authentication path of siblings. Okay, so this is what you start with. Also, you need three stacks. And in these stacks, you have at most, I think, you altogether 3H nodes. And the thing is, this stack will be used to replace this node in the authentication path. This stack will be used to replace this node, and this stack will be used to replace this node. So what is the criterion in this algorithm? The criterion is the following: replace node number j if 2 to the j divides I plus 1. Okay, now we have I is equal to 0, I plus 1 is equal to 1. So which nodes in the authentication path do we have to replace? That is, well, 2 to the 0, which is 1, divides I plus 1, which is 1. This tells us that we have to replace this thing. This node, right? And how do we replace it? Well, we take the blue one. Now, do we have the right authentication path? I think we have it, right? Because this is the next verification key. So its sibling is this one. This can be the same. This can be the same. So this is fine. So we don't need more changes for the authentication path, right? And I think this is what our algorithm tells us. Let's see. So 2 to the 0. Let's see. Is there a mistake? But 2 to the 0 also divides. Let's see. Oh, no. That's true. So now 2 to the right. So do we have to replace this one? No. Because note J is replaced if 2 to the J divides I plus 1. I plus 1 is 1. 2 to the J would be 2 to the 1. If 2, 2 does not divide 1, so we do not replace this node. And 2 to the 2 is 4, also does not divide 1, so we are not going to replace this one. So the algorithm is correct. So now we have, the next thing we have to do is we have to initialize and update the stacks. So how do we do this? Well, so we need, for this stack, we have to work a little bit on it. We have to produce a start node, and this is the start node. I don't want to go into the details of the formula, but there it is. So this is the start node. It is on the right level. If it is on the right level, it remains. So now these are blue, red, green for the next round. So we can now turn to number 1. So let's see. Okay, again, 2 to the 0 divides I plus 1, so we should use this. So, okay, now 2 to the 1 divides 2, so we should replace this one. I think we are done. So we have to update these. So, now, the problem here is now that the red one is on the wrong level. The red one is on level 0. The red one should be on level 1. So how do we make up for this? Well, we compute its sibling, and we compute the next one, right? So now we have the authentication path. This is the authentication path for step, let's see. Oh, no, this is the authentication path for which? This one, right? For number 2 already. This is for this one. Bup. Yeah, this one and this one, yeah. So the gray nodes form the authentication path for step number 2. So I go to, so now that you can do yourself, right? Yeah. Here's an interesting case. What is this? What happened? Well, the thing is, this should be the new green one, but the green one should be number 12, but we have no number 12, so it's not used. So nothing happens. So we don't need it anymore. Yeah. Okay. All right, do you want to see the animation again? It was a lot of work, I think. But it is kind of a very clever way. So what this tells us is we do not have to compute the full tree in order to compute the authentication path, but this is sort of a non-number theoretic algorithm to come up with the authentication path very efficiently, okay? So now. Now, there are implementations of sort of the original Merkle system, and we have extrapolated this. And what happens is they have key generation times for edges equal to 22.7 minutes, 25, 1.4 hours, 32, 45.8 hours, 35, 61.6 days, and 40 is 5.4 years. That is what we don't want to do, right? I mean, if we want to the 40, we want, don't want to do it. So the question is, can we do something about this? And the idea is tree chaining. And the tree chaining idea works as follows. We are not, if we, for example, use depth 40, we will be using two trees of height 20. And this works as follows. So how do we sign? Now we have constructed these two trees of depth 20, and this is what we do. So suppose we are using key pair number I. So what we will do now is we will sign our message with key number I. This goes into the signature, also the corresponding verification key. We construct the authentication path, and this is the authentication path. Now the verifier only knows the public key, and this is the node of the, this is the root of the top tree. The verifier does not know this root. So what we do next is the following. We will be using key number J in this tree to sign this root. So we sign this root. This is the signature of the root. This is this authentication, sorry, this is this verification key. And we add the corresponding authentication path in the upper tree. So we use two small trees, and they are both used for signatures. This is used for the signature of the document. This is used for the signature of the root. And then we can sort of in parallel come up with the next tree, so the next tree of height 20. We don't have to do it all at once. Okay? So how does the verification work? Well, the verifier obtains the signature, checks whether the signature is correct. He computes the path to the first root. He checks whether the signature is correct. He computes the path to the second root. And he checks whether this is the public key. So tree chaining allows you to work with one public key and many, many verification keys. Let me give you a few timings. So we have used W equal to 2 in the Vindranit scheme. Depth 20, 30, and 40. SHA-1. So this is the key generation time which we now use. The interesting thing is signatures are very efficient. So signatures take 9.2 milliseconds, 12.4 milliseconds, 14.9 milliseconds. Verification is even more efficient. So 1.3 milliseconds, 1.4 milliseconds, 1.3 milliseconds. So that is a I mean, this is at least as good as anything that we know from other signature schemes, right? If we make our, we will see in a minute the storage requirements. If we make the keys a little smaller, the times go up a little bit. You see 9.7, 13.2, 16.9, which is still fine, and you see verification is still very fast. Here is the sizes. You see the public key is small anyway. Now the private key and the signatures are bigger than the ones that we are used to, but not much. So this is 1,900 bytes private key for H equal to 20 and 3,600 bytes for private key equal to 40. And correspondingly, the signatures are roughly 4,000 bytes. And we get the signatures. If we use W equal to 3, we get the signature smaller. So you can see that we can also use W equal to 4 or something. I mean, we can play around with the with the parameters. Now SHA-1, people, they did this first with SHA-1. I told them SHA-1, people don't want to see SHA-1 anymore. So we did SHA-256, of course. And even with SHA-256, you see, we get pretty good timings. So maximum timing is 40.9 milliseconds for a signature. And it's a Java implementation, you have to remember this, right? And the verification times are something like 4 milliseconds. So the thing is really, I mean, the thing is really efficient, and here is the spaces that... Okay. So the maximum is signature 7 kilobytes. Here's 10 kilobytes. So these are not, I mean, like, given the prices of storage today, these are not very big, right? So, of course, now we can, here's number theory again. There are papers by Aita, Michandru, Regev, Lubashevsky, Peigert, and Rosen, and so forth. There's provably secure hash functions based on lattice reduction. And I talked with Jintai in the coffee break, and there's provably secure hash function based on multivariate quadratic equation solving. So combining this scheme with one of these hash functions gives you a provably secure scheme. So we look into this at the moment. So here, at the level of hash functions, number theory or whatever might come back. But it seems to be plausible that you restrict yourself to hash functions. Remember, each new hash function gives you a new signature scheme. So this is what we want to look into. Okay, now what we did, of course, since we try to always be practical, we designed a Microsoft Outlook plugin that can sign with Merkle. And you can download this, I think, from our webpage. So you cannot read this, but this is certificate, which means certificate, and this is Merkle tree. Maybe the next one is a little nicer. Here you can see it. This is the fMIME, and it says SHA-256 Merkle tree. So it really works. It really works. And we have... We have this open source library of crypto functions, which we call Flexi Provider, and it contains a lot of stuff, and you can download it and access it. It is www.